This is a CBC podcast.
On Monday, the government of Saskatchewan will outline its priorities in a speech from the throne. The premier says it's a chance for a new beginning 4 weeks after Election Day. Scott Moe says the government's been given a mandate to keep working on a strong economy, but he says people also voted for change. So how will that be reflected? For more, we've reached our political panel. Adam Hunter covers politics for CBC Saskatchewan, and Murray Mandrick writes a political column in the Regina Leader Post. Morning, guys.
Good morning.
Adam, what can you tell us about Monday?
Monday's going to start with that speaker election. That'll be the first thing that happens. And normally, maybe a speaker election wouldn't get a lot of attention and only the political nerds like us would care and pay attention to the votes and who's up for it and who wants it. But this time, there's a couple of reasons. One being that the last couple of speakers didn't have the grandest old time in the job, let's say. And so Randy Weeks is still technically the speaker until Monday. Of course, we know a lot about his story. Mark Doherty before that. Even going back to your guys' time, there's other speakers that had some run-ins with the government. So I think this is going to be something that we'll watch for. The other thing is that the process of elimination really gets down to numbers. And with a number of rookies, more than a dozen rookies, and then about 15 to 17 people now, including the premier and cabinet, the government only has three people to choose from. And so that's Blaine McLeod, Doug Steele, and Todd Gowdy, all of which have differing levels of experience in the House. But those would be the three candidates. And so I think what I'm more going to watch for is what happens with that election. And if that person, you know how they grab the opposition leader, grabs the
yep.
speaker, and the premier grabs the speaker, and they drag them up. Are they going to be really dragging the new speaker up this time?
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, no, thank you. But in all seriousness, that's going to add to some intrigue on Monday.
There is that theatrical dragging of the speaker up to show it's not the easiest job in town, but that is really quite true of the last couple speakers, as Adam says.
Particularly when you have to check them for firearms.
What are you watching for in this?
Well, it's going to be interesting because we have this 27-34 split, right? And so the NDP can immediately, by math, eliminate the one that they don't want most, which is the one the government does want most, because government always wants someone that's going to be most favorable. It's a neutral position, but come on. We know it's not completely neutral. So it's whoever wins has to make a decent enough pitch to the opposition to want to win that second ballot support, because on the second ballot, obviously, with three people, they can get whomever they want. But that's going to be the real question. And perhaps even on the first ballot, if they're not careful, the government might not get the speaker they want. I don't know if there's much difference in terms of the approach of the three. All three have been kind of low-key guys. And none of them, I don't think, have been known to be blatantly partisan. They're not the kind of guys that were standing up and doing the member statements that were most political and everything else. These are generally lower key guys on the back bench. Mr. Gowdy, I thought, was someone that might be headed for cabinet along with Mr. McLeod. But, you know, that's still a possibility. Mr. Steele seems to be the one that's most acceptable to government based on, you know, his service and everything else. But I guess we'll see. It's going to be kind of intriguing, as Adam said, and it's usually not. I pity them for the job. If the government's smart, they'll low-key everything up to and including this. This has to be a session where they have to turn down the boil. And I think that a smart government will do that and focus on health and education this is truly about new beginnings.
And is that what you'll be looking for in the throne speech, Adam, or what are we expecting in it?
Yeah, we heard from Tim McLeod yesterday, who's the government House leader. The government put him up, and he said, you know, they're going to focus on affordability. That's what Scott Moe said as well following the election. And that would just signal to me that it's going to be a lot of things in this shortened fall sitting, which is we're expecting to be no longer than 3 weeks, probably 2.5 weeks at the most, that we're going to get more on the promises that were made in the campaign. So a lot of suite of tax credits, not everything that they have to pass a bill on, things they can just kind of rewrite some regulations, some rules, and then go, okay, we're going to do this. I'll be watching for what bills they are introducing that's maybe something new, something in the throne speech that we weren't expecting. In the past, we've seen things about the Marshal Service or going after the federal government, really specific things that they were signaling that they went and did. Last year at this time, it was Bill 137 in the emergency session that got passed, and then there wasn't a lot of that mentioned during the actual throne speech. So I think, are there any surprises? Are there things that they're they didn't campaign on that maybe they're going to take from the NDP that the NDP campaigned on to try and bridge that gap to, as Marie said, to kind of calm the waters a little bit?
What change will be reflected there, do you think?
That's a good question. I don't know. I hope the change is as Adam said, something where they move away from the change room policy. That would be the smart thing to do, move away from the more partisan social conservative stuff that they've been pushed towards by special interests that we're seeing. And we're already seeing signs of that, although we're seeing signs from ex-MLAs whining and making noise about the election. And that's too bad for them, I guess. But, you know, like, I mean, like if the government's smart, they'll do what they should have done in government, ignore her. But generally speaking, like, I mean, I think that they need to basically look at that different approach and stick to their knitting, stick to health, stick to education, stick to the inflation, food cost stories. We're doing stories about the North and scurvy, for heaven's sake. I think there's real issues that we need to deal with in this province.
Speaking of real issues, I had kind of a flurry of people who support the NDP tell me that they didn't think that it was a story that an NDP MLA is being investigated for promoting both her small business and her political work. But the commissioner says that there's enough to look into it. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, this was one that the NDP, I think, got ahead of. They put it out and said, hey, we're being investigated by the Conflict of Interest Commissioner. And specifically, it's Alina Young. Alina Young owns a gourmet cheese shop in town in the Cathedral area. And she posts about that on her personal pages, but also posts as MLA business. So someone from the government, presumably, said, hey, look into this, to the Conflict of Interest Commissioner. And what stands out to me is that there are no rules specifically to social media posting. And we know, working in our business, that there's rules governing what we post on social media and some guidelines. And so I think that's the spin that the NDP's put on it. Amira Conway said, hey, she's the ethics critic. She said, well, maybe this is a good thing. We don't have rules. We might be the first jurisdiction to do this. I don't know if anything's going to come of it, or if this is something that's, you know, Alina Young's doing to, you know, further her business, that she's saying this is just something I do. This is something that's part of my every day. And they kind of compared it to when Scott Moe posts from a combine or doing different things. And we see those posts all the time. And the interesting thing about what the premier posts is sometimes we have to look and see on Facebook or X what the premier's posting, because that's where he's breaking news or he's making a big announcement or they're taking the federal government to court. And we find out after he posts that. So I'll wait and see what this is. And just to remind our listeners as well, this is probably a retaliation for what's happening with Jeremy Cockrell and Gary Wall, who are both, one investigation's done and the Cockrell investigation hasn't been posted yet.
Murray, what do you make of this?
As Adam said, it's a bit of a tempest in a cheese shop. I kind of bear it. It's not. It doesn't look good for.
Keep going.
Steve Patterson. sorry about that. No, I can't take it to all that seriously. But you know what? I'm actually glad the commissioner is, because I think better to err on the side of small detail than ignore big things, which has been, I think, done in the past in terms of some of these bigger ethics complaints that have gone forward and maybe haven't been pursued. I'm glad they're pursuing everything.
And you guys, before you go, let's talk a bit more about the scurvy in the North that Murray mentioned. What does the opposition want done about that?
I think the opposition's big thing, and this is something that goes back to the election campaign, is the costs of things. So the gas costs, food costs, they think the government should step in and give some relief in terms of both of those things. So grocery prices and also the cost of gas, cost of fuel. And we know that those costs are higher in the North, and that's sometimes why these prices go up. But there's also been some concerns and some allegations of price gouging and greed. And so I think this is something that I would expect on the first question period hearing on Tuesday that it'll be raised.
Murray, what are you thinking in terms of government response here?
Oh, what an incredible story. Like, how does this happen? You know, it's sort of, the government has to respond. And if they're really talking about new beginnings and a new way of doing things, particularly since this is a northern story, because we know what happened last term when we saw a northern issue walk down from Laurens Park and the lawn across the legislature and be ignored on something as serious as teen suicide in the north. This is a serious issue as well, and one that shouldn't exist. It exists because of economic conditions. It exists because we can't seem to get perishables up there and there's no education. It exists because of changing lifestyles up there. So this is a good opportunity for government to seize on an issue like this and say, we care about the North. We may have lost an MLA from up there, but we still care, and this is the message that we're sending. If they're smart, they'll address this not only in the throne speech, but as something important, because it is important.
Thanks very much, you guys.
You're welcome.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.